I'm Mike Green, Public Awareness Officer for the American Mathematical Society, and I'm talking with Mary Lou Zeman, who is the R. Wells Johnson Professor of Mathematics at Bowdoin College, and we're talking about global climate models. Mary Lou, could you tell us a little bit about how good you think they are, or how accurate these models are?
I think what's been seen so far is that they can do a pretty good job. They can mimic well what's happened in the past, if they're tuned appropriately, but for the future, they still give quite different predictions. Various standard tests give quite a different range of predictions, and there are big global averages on which they all agree, but then for the more local regional predictions, they can disagree quite seriously, and everybody knows that, everybody accepts that, and so a lot of the challenges involved are firstly how to improve the models so that they will agree and give more reliable predictions. How to improve computational power so that we can get finer resolution, but also how to understand the underlying uncertainty that is leading to those disagreements, those different predictions, because the models themselves have inherent chaos in them, the observations have inherent error in them, the physical processes have inherent error in the model, and all those different inherent errors and inherent uncertainty in the actual chaotic system lead to different predictions, and we need mathematics to help us understand all those different processes before we can understand how best to use what the models can tell us.
So you'd like more powerful computers, right?
That's certainly one of the pieces. One of the pieces is more powerful computers to grind. Another piece is clever algorithms so that you don't need to grind so badly. Another piece is understanding the different timescales involved so that you don't have to grind little tiny details for 100 years.
Before we started the interview, you mentioned that you'd got more people to enter this field so that you could get the more
mathematicians. Yes, we desperately need more mathematicians in this field. And the really exciting thing in this climate math initiative that a group of us have created is that there is huge enthusiasm. Mathematicians would like to enter the field, they'd like to help. The big gap is that it's not part of our culture. We don't know the material. We don't know the language. And so one of the things we need is a mechanism to learn quickly. So one of the things our group is trying to provide is the material with which to learn quickly. So we're creating a website, and we want to give access to mathematicians to these simple climate models, models that mathematicians can get their teeth into, that they can run themselves, that they can get intuition for, they can look at the bifurcations in, they can couple them together and see what nonlinear feedback does between these models. And if you let a mathematician do that, they will learn really fast. And then they'll be up to speed to start thinking about the big models.
Are there things that we don't understand, the physics of it, or is it more meteorology?
All of it. There are holes everywhere. So the physics of clouds, what I keep hearing from climate scientists is, how do you even characterize a cloud? What parameters do you use to characterize it? And once you've characterized it, how the clouds that are broad and kind of horizontally spread have one effect, they reflect a lot of light. The clouds that are rather vertically spread have a completely different effect. Some are increasing warming, some are preventing warming. So clouds are apparently a huge gap, A, in physical understanding, B, in knowing how to model them, chemical understanding as well. What seeds a cloud? What aerosols will seed a cloud? What particles coming up from the ocean into the atmosphere will seed a cloud? It's really interesting. Yes.
And then did you get interested just because of the immediacy for the planet, or was it the mathematics that appealed to you?
First it came from the immediacy for the planet. And when I first started getting interested in this, I was thinking more in terms of bringing it into the classroom so that we could use planet-related examples in our calculus classes and our pre-calculus classes so that we could just raise awareness around the whole country of what the data actually says. But of course, once I started getting into it and started looking, then it became very clear very quickly that there are huge, broad mathematical questions, and that of course becomes even more exciting because the whole math community can get involved. I really don't know a mathematical subject which could not play a role in helping to address some of the mathematical challenges underlying the more screamingly obvious climate questions.
So do you have an easy example of a place where this comes in, like Calculus 1, for example, a problem you've used?
So, for example, in Calculus, what is one of the fundamental things we do in Calculus 1? Tangent line questions, right? So you can look at CO2 production, of course. You can look at the CO2 atmospheric history, and you can just simply ask the question, what's the tangent line now? What happens if we follow that? What happens if we could fix at the rate of 2000 or 1990 or whatever people ask? Then what would be the 100-year forecast? So any of those very basic atmospheric greenhouse gas questions can be phrased as simple, straightforward calculus questions. And then there's a very nice website, somebody called Tom Pfaff, P-F-A-F-F, at Ithaca College, has developed quite a few sustainability-based Calculus 1 and Calculus 2 worksheets. And so he creates questions like this around peak oil production, solar panel usage in different countries, and transportation and fuel efficiency standards, population, of course, human population, grain production. And also another one that's coming up that's really pretty to bring into maybe a Calculus 2 where you're really beginning to do some interesting modeling is the feedback between CO2 levels and temperature. It's very clear from greenhouse gas physics that CO2 can drive temperature. But the historical record shows that actually temperature seems to rise a little bit before CO2, so temperature drives CO2. There are so many systems in science that are feedback loops like that. And the whole concept of feedback loop is a very nice one to teach in math. It's one of the first places where you really need math to be able to predict what's going on. And so this is another example of a feedback loop. They can drive each other. We don't have to argue about who's driving who. They drive each other. And what happens when you have things that drive each other? You can have spiraling out of control. You can have stable oscillations. So it's a fun one to bring to the classroom as well.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
It's incredibly rewarding to use the skill and this kind of perversion of our minds, which is the love of mathematics, to work on something that we genuinely believe is of immediate, urgent importance. There are so many young mathematicians out there who would like to work in this area, and it would be great if more of our senior mathematicians would help them open up this subject, be mentors for them.
That's Mary Lou Zeman, our Wells Johnson Professor of Mathematics at Bowdoin College. Thanks.
Thank you.